He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? Dada.
With all of that said, with all of that acknowledged, I think given all of the noise, it would make sense for the Lakers to have, by this point, said, LeBron opted in, we're all rowing in the same direction. And I don't know, maybe this is the PR person in me to like, I don't like silences that can be filled by speculation. Case in point, the Lakers' response to Jerry West dying allowed a lot of people to speculate, given how we know Jeannie specifically feels about Jerry West. When Jerry West died, and the Lakers, it took them hours to mention anything, and all they sent out was like barely even a page long graphic saying, you know, how they're going to miss him and all that stuff. It allowed all of us to say, oh shit, they really didn't like Jerry West. And I think, again, coming from the PR world, I just don't think that's an opportunity you want to give to a very large audience. And I think here with this player option to this point, the Lakers have allowed everybody to speculate on what it means that the Lakers haven't acknowledged it. Now, if you don't think it matters, cool. You probably are right. But it's the kind of thing where, like, it might not matter right now. But if we get a suboptimal outcome to the end of LeBron's tenure here, this is one of those things that, you know, it doesn't matter right now, but it might matter eventually, or you might look back on it eventually and say, oh yeah, yeah, that was one of those breadcrumbs that we probably should have noted. Let's talk about the Giannis plan. Because again, I think ideally, I think all Lakers fans feel this way, by the way. Ideally, we see what the Lakers are capable of with LeBron, with Luka, with Austin, now with Ayton, and with whoever is on their roster beyond those guys, with LaRavia too. We see what the Lakers are capable of and seeing what kind of championship-type roster they can build given the assets that they have to work with here. And I know there's a lot of talk out there about, well, but you know, you can't take on money that goes too far into the future because you want to have absolute max cap space to be able to sign or at least be a threat to sign Giannis or be a threat to sign Jokic or be a threat to sign both, though I don't think you can. I think he calls it the Giannis plan. Though again, it could also refer to Jokic. And by the way, Denver is positioning themselves to be able to talk to Luka too. That should be noted as well. But my problem with this Giannis plan is that you're pretty good now. Your starting points right now are pretty damn good. Would it be ideal to have LeBron on your books for a little bit less? Duh. I could say the same thing about any player on the Lakers books. I would also rather have Ayton on the minimum. I would rather have, you know, Reeves or any of these guys at a little bit less because it gives you more flexibility elsewhere. That's how a cap situation works. But you still have to, when you have this kind of an opportunity, when you have Luka, when you have LeBron, you still have to put together the absolute best roster that you can. Future, not be damned, but like the future is the future. We might get hit by a huge ass asteroid. There's a whole subsection of Twitter that is rooting for the giant asteroid. we don't know what could happen between now and 2027. Giannis could get hurt. Luka could get hurt. Knock on wood that it doesn't happen. Jokic could get hurt. And now your plan for this great player would be for a diminished player at that point. And you know, I've said this on the show before, but the way to flexibility in the NBA nowadays isn't cap space. It's having players on your books on high value contracts that other teams want. So that if Giannis goes to the Bucks and says, "Hey, look, I really appreciate everything that you've done to make me happy here, but we both see it. We aren't competing for a championship. I would like to compete for one more championship at least while I am still in my prime. Can you send me to the Lakers?" Right? Let's say Giannis has that conversation with Milwaukee. If you're the Lakers, the way to getting Giannis in that moment is to have players on your books that Milwaukee might want. That's how you got Luka. You had a player on your books that Nico Harrison wanted to an honestly weird extent. You had Anthony Davis on your books, and Dallas had somehow convinced themselves that the path to winning a championship wasn't through Luka, but is actually through Anthony Davis's defense. And so by having Anthony Davis on your books and some of the cap stuff and Max Christie on that contract, all of that stuff, that's how you got Luka. It wasn't through cap space. So yeah, I don't love this idea that, you know, all right, we are going to have our books absolutely wiped clean and then not being able to offer Milwaukee anything if it comes to a trade, because Milwaukee would much rather lose Giannis via trade than via free agency. They would, just like the Lakers would much rather lose LeBron James right now via trade than free agency if they had to lose LeBron. So this idea of like, yeah, we can't acquire any player whose money cuts into 2027. That doesn't make any sense to me. Is that player good at basketball? Check yes or no. Will that player be wanted on that salary by some other team? Check yes or no. When the Lakers traded when the Lakers got LeBron via cap space, they were able to clear that cap space by trading Nance and Clarkson and all of those guys to Cleveland. Cleveland made it more possible for the Lakers to sign LeBron James via cap space. But when it came time, when you absolutely needed to make, you know, open up that cap space, guess what you did? You did it. You accomplished that goal. So yeah, this whole thing where it's like, yeah, we can only do this, and we can only do this one thing. We can only focus on this one thing. I just don't really buy it. Now, I'm not saying, by the way, that this is definitely how they're doing it. We might wake up tomorrow. By the way, we're going to Vegas. I land in Vegas on Friday. The rest of the league lands in Vegas on Thursday. Literally, the rest of the league lands in Vegas on Thursday. And they're going to spend a whole week in Vegas basically together. And the whole time they're there, you're going to have GMs bumping into each other in the hallways of the Thomas and Mack Arena and whatever the other smaller arena is there. And the whole time that they're there, they can have meetings in that arena. They can have dinner meetings. They can have lunch meetings. They can have craps table meetings. Like, it does, like, there are plenty of opportunities while the Lakers and everybody are in Vegas to reopen these conversations in a more meaningful way when you are staring across from whatever table at the person that you're negotiating with, not sending emails, not on a Zoom call, not on a conference call. And that's something that the league, I think, is kind of looking forward to collectively, to be able to have these conversations in a more meaningful way in that setting. And so, like, I don't want to completely overblow this whole Giannis plan, because it might not even be as important to the Lakers as it has been reported to this point. Not questioning the reporting, not questioning Dave here at all. I'm saying that the Lakers, you know, there could have been an issue in transit, you know, something lost in translation, and the Lakers could have said something to the extent of like, yeah, we'd prefer to be flexible in 2027, but da 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 da. And the thing that was, you know, more noted was the stuff that was before the but, not the stuff after the but. So, yeah, my larger point here before I dive into your guys' questions is, if this whole Giannis plan is in place, and if the Lakers are dogmatically viewing cap flexibility in 2027, that to me would signal a gross miscalculation of how these things are done in the NBA now anyway. And I would hope that they're much higher priority than any kind of cap flexibility in 2027 is what they are currently capable of doing with LeBron James and with Luka Doncic on the roster. All right. Whew. Got a little heated there. It was fun. All right, let's dive into your guys' questions. As always, I start with iTunes. First question here, Juice1334 asks, can we get in on Andrew Wiggins or Dylan Brooks? So Wiggins, I've reported that the Lakers have had serious conversations with Miami about. Dylan Brooks, I haven't heard to the same extent. Now, I don't know how high the Lakers are on Dylan Brooks, given all of the nonsense that he pulled while he was with Memphis, and how specifically the Lakers seem to enjoy beating him in that series. So I'm not saying that they definitely, like, they have probably called just to see what's up. I don't think conversations have gotten as far on Brooks, or they would be as interested on Brooks, depending on price, obviously. But I think they view Wiggins as a better fit than Brooks culturally. That said, if Phoenix does go into full tire sale mode, that if Brooks's price reaches a point that the Lakers are kind of comfortable with, then I could see the Lakers kind of, you know, having those conversations internally. Is it worth it? Is he too much of a wild card? All of that stuff. The thing is, like, you're already basically banking on culture to steer DeAndre Ayton back in the right direction. Do you also want to add another variable to that in Dylan Brooks? I don't know, but what I can say to actually answer the question is, yes, I have heard that the Lakers and Heat have talked plenty about Andrew Wiggins. I haven't heard as much. Honestly, I haven't really asked as much about Dylan Brooks because I don't really like him as a player. But I will, and we'll see where that takes us. Next question here comes from Kush Corleone, who writes, can you explain again what Rob Pelinka could have done to avoid being in this position with Austin? I know somehow it somehow ties back to when he was a restricted free agent and has some similarities to what was done with Christie that I guess got avoided with the Luka trade. So essentially, it was more, I believe, the type of contract that Reeves was signed to in the first place, where they could have basically had Reeves super cheap one extra year. Now, eventually Reeves was going to be a free agent, and you know, some of this just can't be avoided right now. Like, honestly, this current situation with Austin isn't the worst. You have him on a very valuable $14 million expiring contract. Likely expiring, because I think he's going to opt out after the season unless he gets hurt or something. You offered him the max extension, and unfortunately the max that the Lakers can offer in that extension, because of how little they're paying Austin right now, isn't an amount that was all that interesting to Austin and his camp. So you're going to head into next offseason probably with Austin as an unrestricted free agent, which is certainly a little nerve-wracking, but we just saw Austin's agent, Aaron Riley and AMR as an agency, steer Jake LaRavia to the Lakers. And if, like, if for whatever reason, Austin or his agency weren't happy with the Lakers as an organization, I don't think they'd be steering more of their clients to the Lakers. So I'm not at all worried about the relationship between Austin and the Lakers. Every time I've asked about it, I'm told with no like ambiguity that Austin loves being a Laker. There was that report the other day or last week or whatever about Austin not liking playing with Luka. And when I asked about it, was told like, come on, dude, stop. This is stupid. That guy's just talking out of his ass. So like, I'm not at all nervous about losing Austin via unrestricted free agency, but there is always a bit of a risk there, right? Like if Austin gets some kind of ridiculous offer, and jumps at that opportunity, then that would suck. But also, you know, if he gets that kind of ridiculous offer and is now on that, on some other team's books for like an amount that the Lakers wouldn't want him at, then, you know, sometimes that happens. So, could this situation have been avoided? I guess technically, but it's just about timelines. Eventually we were going to arrive here one way or another. Next question comes from Lakers Fedora, who writes, "Hey Anthony, thanks for the, thanks for the spot on work this free agency period, as uneventful and disappointing as it's been. What are your thoughts on for the veteran minimum contract guys this year? We used to use those spots so well, but it's been an absolute failure since the 2020 and 21 season. Marjon Beauchamp, Gary Payton II, Caleb Houston. Curious who you think might be a good fit." Well, the first things first, Lakers have to open up roster spots. Right now, they're sitting at 15. You know, and if they even want DeAnthony Melton, who I'm told is still, which word do I want to use here? I don't know if I want to go so far as like likely to be a Laker, but I would say most around the league kind of pencil him in to be a Laker, I guess is what I could say. But if they do want to get Ayton, they would have to waive Shake Milton. And like, here's how I'll take you behind the curtain a little bit here. With my reporting, the way that I kind of do it is you have to know which questions to ask. And in order to inform myself on which questions I need to ask people about situations, you work off of what you've seen from the Lakers in the past. So some familiar tendencies that we have seen with Rob Pelinka has been him liking to enter a season with at least one first round pick at his disposal. He likes to enter a season with one open roster spot usually. And you know, he likes to have as much flexibility under whatever hard cap or apron as he can possibly have, right? And if you work off of those tendencies, I think we can assume, and this is how I do this, I start with an assumption and I ask, all right, these are the things that you guys are usually kind of focused on. How do we arrive at checking those boxes going into next season? And you could do so as easily as waiving Shake Milton, but that doesn't even open you up the full biannual exception. So what do you got to do? Well, you have to open a roster spot, usually by way of a consolidation trade. And I don't think they want to waive Maxi Kleba. I don't think they want to waive Gabe Vincent, right? So if you're not going to waive Gabe Vincent, you're not going to waive Maxi Kleba. You could waive Shake Milton, but it doesn't necessarily accomplish the goal that you're looking for. It then makes sense. The assumption is a safe one to think that the Lakers are going to open up a roster spot via consolidation trade, a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1 type of deal. So then I go and ask whoever I have to talk to, hey, is this something that you're working on? And I'm told, yeah, we are trying to open up a roster spot by way of some type of a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1 deal. And we'll do that right up until that July 20th deadline, upon which we have to guarantee Shake Milton's deal. So I am pretty sure, to the extent that I can be, the Lakers are going to go into Vegas, and their top goal right now is going to be some kind of 2-for-1 deal that brings them back or a 3-for-1 deal even, that brings them back kind of like a, you know, an Andrew Wiggins type. They already got their starting center, so I don't think they're interested in trading for a starting center. I think they're focused on a small forward or a wing who can also operate as a point of attack defender. And then after you open that roster spot, you then use that biannual salary to sign D'Anthony Melton. And if you wind up opening up even more roster spots, then you can see what's out there on the minimum market. All of that is a long way of saying that we're still pretty freaking early into the offseason, and there is plenty of time for them to check as many of these boxes as they can, and we'll see to what extent they're able to. Oh, second part of that question. I've been thinking about this too. I literally in Slack said, like, who was the last Vetman contract that like actually panned out, right? Not two-way that you converted, because I think those are a little bit easier, but the last veteran minimum contract that, like, you know, and look, veteran minimum contracts are by nature, excuse me, shots in the dark. So that needs to be noted here too. But sometimes you shoot into the dark and you hit your target, and the Lakers haven't hit a target with a veteran minimum contract in a little while. So why is that? Well, part of that, in my opinion, is not having a fully fledged pro scouting department watching the league for value potentially out there. You know, as we've talked about in the past, everybody in basketball operations, they do their one thing, and then they're also tasked with scouting certain chunks of the league, essentially. And I think that has led to some, you know, value guys kind of falling through the cracks, or poor process on some of those veteran minimum signings. The other part of it, I think, is opportunity, right? Last year, you had everybody opt into the second year of those player option contracts that were poorly handed out in the first place. So you didn't really have an opportunity to do that. This year, I think you're in a somewhat similar boat, and you aren't going to have very many bites at that apple. So that's also going to be it. The third factor here, and this isn't the Lakers specific one, is free agency in general has been pretty ugly for a lot of players. And you wind up having to wait a long time for Gary Trent Jr. to just reluctantly accept a veteran minimum contract. And the Lakers, you know, might not feel comfortable waiting as long for those guys as they want. And it would instead fill out roster spots with the best available player who they can sign at that moment. So I think there's a lot going on there. And I think it's a good thing to note that the Lakers do need to get better at this stuff. But that's, I think, why things stand the way that they do. Manna from Heaven writes, what are your thoughts on the floor stretching bigs the Lakers are looking for? I thought an aging floor spacer didn't work the last time we had one, like in Marc Gasol's case. I swear we are misremembering the Marc Gasol experience. He got sick. But at the beginning of that season, the basketball that he and LeBron specifically were playing together was beautiful. Beautiful. But I guess to your point, he got sick and we never saw him play that way again. Floor spacing bigs. Well, we just saw Indiana trade for Jay Huff. So maybe that makes Thomas Bryant a little available. I've watched that movie a couple of times and wasn't enthused about it. The thing with floor spacing bigs is a lot of it is more theoretical than it is actually practical. And if you are going to, if a if you're going to add a floor spacing big specifically to your roster, you probably have to have that player on more than the veteran minimum, because that is such a valuable commodity in the NBA. That's why, like Miles Turner, you just saw the Milwaukee Bucks just, you know, eat $20+ million and will be eating $20+ million for the next 5 years just to open up the flexibility to get themselves Miles Turner. And I would, you know, to that, I would say vaya con Dios. I respect it, honestly. Like, so long as they have to do whatever they feel like they have to do to keep Giannis, I get it. But the those types of centers that can space the floor, even Brook Lopez, right? The Lakers were hoping to sign him this summer at the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. And then they found out, nope, he was looking for more than that. And eventually he got almost double the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So those bigs that do actually space the floor, they tend to cost a little bit more. And if you sign one on the minimum, it might go really poorly, as it did with Christian Wood, who one, never spaced the floor, and then two, never played in his second season. So yeah, those floor spacing bigs, you either got to draft one probably and have that player cost controlled while that player becomes valuable enough to have it more than the minimum, or you have to get extremely lucky on the veteran minimum contract market, or in all likelihood, you have to fork up either resources in a trade or in terms of cap space, and those players are tough to come by.